training. I knew why Adam was only sending female guards. For the same reason he sent Warren and Ben to accompany me to the sea, Warren wouldn't make sexual overtures toward me because he wasn't interested, and Adam knew how much I disliked Ben. Werewolves are very territorial. Since, supposedly for my protection, Adam had claimed me as his mate before the pack, I was his territory. As far as the pack was concerned, Adam's word was law. Just because I hadn't agreed didn't change what the pack took as truth. Adam had managed to come to some agreement about it with Samuel. I didn't really want to know what it was because it would only tick me off. So I got Honey because Mary Jo was working 24-hour shifts at the fire department, and Daryl's maid Aurelie, the only other female in Adam's pack, was in Ellensburg taking a class to keep up her teaching certification. Complaining about Honey wasn't going to get me a different guard. There wasn't anyone else Adam could send. Littleton is a vampire, I said, trying to infuse a little logic into the situation. He's not going to attack during the daytime. I could make sure to be home before dark until he's caught. He can't get into my home unless I invite him. Not that he would, since he has no reason to think I was anything but a prop for Stefan's costume.
I had a talk with the Marak about sorcerers, said Adam gently. He's the one who told me to put a guard on you day and night. No one knows what kind of monster a demon-ridden vampire is going to be, he said.
I know that, I snapped. If Bran had ordered me guarded, I was doomed. Adam knew it, too.
Elisaveta told me you called her and asked about sorcerers, he said.
Yeah, well, you should be happy. All she told me was that you had given her orders not to tell me anything. Which wasn't exactly true. What the witch had said was,
Adamia says you are to leave it alone. He is a smart man, that one. Let the wolves hunt this sorcerer, Mercedes Thompson. A coyote is no match for a demon.
Warren and Stefan will take care of Littleton, Adam said.
There was sympathy in his voice. He could afford to be sympathetic, because he knew he'd robbed me of any chance of argument. Stefan and Warren are both out hunting tigers with slingshots, I told him. Maybe they'll get a lucky hit, and maybe the tiger will turn and kill them both, while Honey wears white slacks and watches me tune up cars. I walked over to one of the hanging sandbags and began practicing punches. I hadn't intended to say that, hadn't realized how worried I was. Adam could be confident, but he hadn't been in the same room with that thing.
Mercy,
Adam said after watching me a while. I switched to sidekicks.
A screwdriver is a very useful tool, but you don't use it when what you need is a blowtorch, he said. I know you are frustrated. I know you want to be in on the kill after what you saw Littleton do. But if you went out with them, someone would get killed trying to protect you.
Don't you think I know that? I snapped. It was scary that he knew me well enough to understand that it was waiting while others went after Littleton that bothered me the most. I stopped kicking and stared at the swinging black bag, fighting the urge to kick Adam instead. I could change into a coyote. I was faster than a human. I was partially immune to some of the vampire's magics, but I wasn't even sure which ones. That was the extent of my preternatural abilities. It wasn't enough to go after Littleton. If I'd been able to break the harness that night, the sorcerer would have killed me. I knew that, but it didn't diminish the guilt I felt for watching the maid struggle alone. I wanted to go after the sorcerer myself. I wanted to feel his neck under my fangs and taste his blood. I took a deep, shuddering breath. What I really wanted, what I hungered for, was to kill that smiling, cadaverous son of a bitch.
Elisaveta won't go after him, Adam said. Demons apparently have an odd effect on witchcraft. You're not the only one sitting on the sidelines.
You know, today one of the TV stations interviewed the sister of the man the vampires framed for the murders. I kicked the sandbag twice. She cried. She admitted that her brother had been having marital problems, but she'd never imagined he would do something like this. I kicked again, grunting with the effort. You know why she'd never imagined it? Because the poor bastard didn't do anything except be in the wrong place at the wrong damn time.
None of us can afford for the vampires to come out now, Adam said.
I could tell the lies bothered him, too. Adam was a straightforward person, but he understood necessity. So did I. That didn't mean I had to like it. I know the vampires have to hide their presence, I told the sandbag. I know people aren't ready to find out about all the things that hide in the darkness. I understand that keeping them hidden saves us all from mass hysteria that would lead to a lot more people dying, but that trucker, you remember the one who was set up as the murderer? He had kids. They'll have to grow up with the idea that their father killed their mother. I'd written down their names. Someday, when it was safe, I'd see they knew the truth. Their pain, the murders, and every time I woke up with a memory of the smell of the poor woman's death and the sound of Littleton's taunting laugh, all of those things were on the sorcerer's account. I wanted to be on the collection committee. He played with her. I sent the bag swinging with a roundhouse, my best kick, hoping if I spoke the worst of that night it would stay out of my dreams. I bet she knew that he'd already killed those other people. I bet she knew he was going to kill her. He tortured her, cutting her a little at a time so that it would take her longer to die.
Mercy. Adam's voice was a purr, ready to offer comfort, but I wasn't going to fall down that hole. Everything meant too much to werewolves, and too little.
If I let Adam comfort me, he could, and probably would, take it as an admission that I acknowledged him as my leader, maybe as my mate. It wasn't his fault. Werewolf instincts are very strong. Samuel was safer, though he was a powerful dominant, because he wasn't alpha of a pack. Being alpha was more than dominant. There is magic in the bindings of a pack that gives power to their leader. He can draw on their strength and give some of it back to them. I'd seen Adam's pack heal him and give him the power to force his dominion on another group of werewolves. Being alpha also gives a wolf the need to protect and control everyone they believe falls under their command. I didn't. But Adam had declared me his mate, so he disagreed with me. I couldn't afford to soften my position at all. I backed up the length of the garage, then ran hard toward the bag. A jumping, spinning back kick is one of those moves that my sensei said had one purpose, to intimidate. Sure, if it hit, the kick was devastating. But any martial artist who was any good wouldn't allow one to hit, because flashy kicks are too slow. Usually. I launched as hard as I could, spinning fast enough to leave me dizzy. The heel of my foot caught the bag just below the top edge as it was supposed to. If the sandbag had been a person, I'd have broken his neck. I might even have landed on my feet. The chain that suspended the bag kept it from falling back the way a person would have, and I hadn't expected the force I generated. I landed bruisingly hard on my butt. I lay back quickly, flat on the floor, but Adam caught the bag before it could swing back and hit me. He whistled softly as sand started sifting down from a small tear in the seam of the bag.
Nice kick.
Adam, I said, staring up at the ceiling. He saved her. For dessert.
What? Saved whom?
The maid. Littleton saved her. Like a kid hoarding his chocolate Easter bunny. He put the maid in the bathroom out of sight because he didn't want to kill her too soon. He was waiting for Stefan. There were other reasons he could have stashed her in the bathroom, like he'd fed already on the other people he'd killed. But there had been something in his face when he'd brought her out that had said, at last.
Was he waiting for Stefan in particular, or for whoever Marsilia sent?
Asked Adam, seeing the important part of it before I did. I thought of how much Littleton seemed to know about Stefan, intimate things, though Stefan had never met him. But it was more than what he'd said that made me certain. It was the way he'd seemed so pleased, as if everything was happening as expected. For Stefan, I said, then continued to the obvious question. I wonder who told him Stefan was coming.
I'll call Warren and tell him you think someone told Littleton Stefan was coming for him, Adam said. Stefan will have a better idea how Littleton might have found out, and if it means he has a traitor in his camp.
I stayed where I was while Adam got the phone off the wall and began punching buttons. We'd spent years as adversaries, two predators sharing territory and a certain unwelcome attraction. Somehow, during all those years I spent outwardly acquiescing to his demands while making sure I held my own, I'd won his respect. I'd had werewolves love me and hate me, but I'd never had one respect me before, not even Samuel. Adam respected me enough to act on my suspicions. It meant a lot. I close my eyes and let the flow of his voice surround me and drive away the frustration. Adam was right. I wasn't suited for going after a vampire, any vampire, and certainly not when aided by a demon. I'd just have to be satisfied when Warren or Stefan did it. If Ben killed Littleton, though, I didn't know if that would satisfy me. I hated to owe Ben any more than I already did. Adam hung up the phone. I heard the quiet sound of his feet walking toward me on the padded floor, and the hiss as the mat gave way when he sat beside me. After a moment, he untied the top of my gi and pulled it off, leaving me in my t-shirt and white gi pants. I let him do it.
"Passive isn't like you," he said.
I growled at him, though I didn't open my eyes. "Shut up! I'm wallowing in misery here. Have a little respect." He laughed and rolled me over until my face was pressed into the sweat-scented mat. His hands were warm and strong as they dug into the tense muscles of my lower back. When he dug into my shoulders, I went boneless. At first he was all business, finding the knots left by sleepless nights and days of physically demanding work. Then his hands softened, and the brisk rubs became light caresses.
"You smell like burnt oil and WD-40, he said, a smile in his voice.
"So plug your nose," I retorted. To my dismay, it came out with more sugar than vinegar. I was so easy. One back rub and I was his. My susceptibility to him was the reason I'd been avoiding him. Somehow, lying on my face with his hands on my back, it didn't seem like a good enough reason. He didn't smell of burnt oil, but of forest, wolf, and that exotic wild scent that belonged only to him. His hands slipped under my tee and spread wide over my lower back, then feathered over my bra strap. I could have told him that sports bras don't have clasps, but then I'd have to take an active part in my own seduction. I wanted him to be the aggressor. A small part of me, the very small part of me that wasn't turning to jelly under his hands, wondered why. I didn't want to delegate responsibility, I decided lazily. I was more than willing to accept responsibility for my own actions, and allowing him to slide his warm, calloused hands into my hair was certainly an action on my part. I loved a man's hands in my hair, I decided. I loved Adam's hands. He bit the nape of my neck, and I moaned. The door between the garage and the house popped open suddenly.
"Hey, Dad! Hey, Mercy!"
Ice water couldn't have been more effective. The hands on my butt stilled as Adam's daughter's quick steps paused. I opened my eyes and met her gaze. She changed her hairstyle since last time I'd seen her, going from startling to even more startling. It was no more than a half inch long, and yellow. Not blonde yellow, but daffodil yellow. The effect was charming, but a little bizarre. Not what a rescuer ought to look like. Her face went blank as she realized what she'd interrupted.
I'll go upstairs and watch a show, she said,
not sounding like herself at all. I scooted out from under Adam. "And Jesse saves the day," I said lightly. "Thank you. That was getting out of hand." She paused, looking surprised. I wondered uncharitably how many times she'd walked in on her mother in similar situations and what her mother's response had been. I never had liked Jesse's mother, and was happy to believe all sorts of evil about her. I let anger at the games her mother might have played surround me. When you've lived with werewolves, you learn tricks to hide what you're feeling from them. Anger, for instance, covers up panic pretty well. And, out from under Adam's sensuous hands, I was panicking plenty. Adam snorted.
"That's one way to put it."
To my relief, he'd stayed where we'd been, sinking his face down into the mat. "Even with my willpower, his lure was too great," I said melodramatically, complete with wrist to forehead. If I made a joke of it, he'd never realize how truthful I was being. A slow smile spread across her face, and she quit looking like she was ready to bolt back into the house.
"Dad's kind of a stud, all right."
"Jesse,"
warned Adam, his voice muffled only a little by the mat. She giggled. "I have to agree," I said in overly serious tones. "Maybe as high as a 7 or 8 even."
"Mercedes," Adam thundered, surging to his feet.
I winked at Jesse, held my gi top over my left shoulder with one finger, and strolled casually out the back door of the garage. I didn't mean to, but when I turned to shut the door, I looked back and saw Adam's face. His expression gave me cold chills. He wasn't angry or hurt. He looked thoughtful, as if someone had just given him the answer to a question that had been bothering him. He knew. I was still shaking as I gingerly climbed over the barbed wire fence between Adam's land and mine. All my life I blended in with those around me. It is the gift of the coyote. It's what helps us survive. I learned early how to imitate the wolves. I played by their rules as long as they did. If they pushed it beyond reasonable limits because they thought I was less than they, being coyote rather than wolf, or because they were jealous that I did not have to heed the moon's call, then all bets were off. I played my strengths to their weaknesses. I lied with my body and eyes licking their boots, then tormenting them in whatever way I could come up with. Wolf etiquette had become a game to me, a game with rules I understood. I thought I was immune to the stupid dominant submission thing, immune to the alpha's power. I just had a very visceral lesson that I was not. I didn't like it. Not at all. If Jesse hadn't come in, I would have surrendered myself to Adam, like some heroine from a 1970s series romance, the kind my foster mother used to read all the time. Ick. I walked across my back field until I stood beside the decrepit rabbit that served as my parts car, as well as my means of getting back at Adam when he got too dictatorial. If he looked out his back window, it sat right in the center of his field of view. I'd pushed it out of the garage several years ago when Adam had complained about my mobile home spoiling his view. Then every time he bothered me, I made it uglier. Right now it was missing three wheels and the rear bumper, all stored safely in my garage. Big red letters across the hood said, "For a good time, call," followed by Adam's phone number. The graffiti had been Jesse's suggestion. I dropped down in the dirt beside the rabbit and leaned my head against the fender, trying to figure out why I'd suddenly been overwhelmed with a desire to submit to Adam. Why hadn't I felt like this before? Or had that been why I'd run so hard? I tried to think back, but all I remembered was worrying about getting so involved with another werewolf. Could he have made me submit to him on purpose? Was it physiological or parapsychological, science or magic? If I knew it was going to happen, could I resist it? Who could I ask? I looked at the car parked in the driveway. Samuel was home from his shift at the ER. Samuel would know if anyone did. I'd just have to figure out how to ask him. It was a testimony to how shaken up I was that I got to my feet and headed home with the intention of asking one werewolf, who had made it plain that he was only waiting to make his move on me, about the way another werewolf had made me desire him. I'm not usually that dumb. I was already beginning to have doubts about the wisdom of my plans by the time I reached the front porch. I opened the door and was met by a frigid blast of air. My old wall unit had been able to keep my bedroom about 10 degrees cooler than the outside, which was all right with me. I like hot weather, but most of the wolves had trouble with it, which is why Samuel had installed the new heat pump and paid for it. A considerate roommate, he usually left the temperature where I set it. I took a look at the thermostat and saw that Samuel had punched it down as far as it would go. It wasn't 42 degrees inside, but it was trying. Pretty decent effort considering it was over 100 degrees outside, and my trailer had been built in 1978, before the days of manufactured homes with good insulation. I turned it to a more reasonable temperature. "Samuel, why'd you turn the temperature down so low?" I called, dropping my ghee top on the couch. There was no reply, though he had to have heard me. I walked through the kitchen area and into the hallway. Samuel's door was mostly shut, but he hadn't closed it all the way. "Samuel?" I touched the door, and it opened a foot or so, just enough that I could see Samuel stretched out on his bed, still in his hospital scrubs, and smelling of cleanser and blood. He had his arm over his eyes. "Samuel?" I paused in the doorway to give my nose a chance to tell me what he was feeling, but I couldn't smell the usual suspects. He wasn't angry or frightened. There was something. He smelled of pain. "Samuel? Are you all right?"
You smell like Adam.
He took his arm down and looked at me with wolf eyes, pale as snow and ringed in ebony. Samuel isn't here today, I thought, trying not to panic or do any other stupid thing. I had played with Samuel's wolf as a child, along with all the other children in Aspen Springs. I hadn't realized how dangerous that would have been with any other wolf until I was much older. I would have felt better now if those wolf eyes had been in the wolf body. Wolf eyes on a human face meant the wolf was in charge. I'd seen new wolves lose control. If they did it very often, they were eliminated for the sake of the pack and everyone who came in contact with them. I'd only seen Samuel lose control once before, and that was after a vampire attack. I sank down on the floor, making certain my head was lower than his. It was always an interesting feeling, making myself helpless in front of someone who might tear my throat out. Come to think of it, the last time I'd done this, it had been with Samuel, too. At least I was acting out of self-preservation, not some buried compulsion to submit to a dominant wolf. I was faking it, not submitting because of some damn buried instinct. After I told myself that, I realized it was true. I had no desire to cower before Samuel. Under other, less worrisome circumstances, I'd have been cheered up.
Sorry, Samuel whispered, putting his arm back over his eyes. Bad day. There was an accident on 240 near where the old Y interchange was. A couple of kids in one car, 18 and 19 years old. Mother with an infant in the other. All of them still in critical condition. Maybe they'll make it.
He'd been a doctor for a very long time. I didn't know what had set him off with this accident in particular. I made an encouraging sound.
There was a lot of blood, he said at last. The baby got pretty cut up from the glass. Took 30 stitches to plug the leaks. One of the ER nurses is new, just graduated from the community college. She had to leave in the middle. Afterwards, she asked me how I learned to manage so well when the victims were babies.
His voice darkened with bitterness that I'd seldom heard from him before as he continued.
I almost told her that I'd seen worse and eaten them, too. The baby would have only been a snack.
I could have left then. Samuel had enough control left not to come after me, probably. But I couldn't leave him like that. I crawled cautiously across the floor, watching him for a twitch of muscle that would tell me he was ready to pounce. Slowly, I raised my hand up until it touched his. He didn't react at all. If he'd been a new wolf, I'd have known what to say. But helping new wolves through this kind of situation had been one of Samuel's jobs in the pack I'd grown up in. There was nothing I could say that he didn't already know. The wolf is a practical beast, I told him finally, thinking it might have been the thought of eating the baby that bothered him so much. You're more careful what you eat. You aren't likely to pounce on the operating table and eat someone if you aren't hungry. It was almost word for word the speech I'd heard him use with the new wolves.
I'm so tired, he said, raising the hair on the back of my neck. Too tired. I think it's time to rest.
He wasn't talking about physically. Werewolves aren't immortal, just immune to age. But time is their enemy anyway. After just so long, one wolf told me, nothing matters anymore, and death looks better than living another day. Samuel was very old. The Maroc, Samuel's father, had taken to calling me once a month to check on things, he said. For the first time, it occurred to me that he hadn't been checking on me, but on his son. How long have you felt this way? I asked, inching my way up onto his bed, slowly, so I didn't startle him. Did you leave Montana because you couldn't hide this from Bran?
No. I want you, he said starkly, moving his arm so I could see that his eyes had changed back to human gray-blue.
Do you? I asked, knowing that it wasn't completely true. Your wolf might still want me, but I don't think you do. Why did you leave the Maroc to come here? He rolled away, giving his back to me. I didn't move, careful not to crowd him. I didn't back away, either, just waited for his answer. Eventually, it came.
It was bad, after Texas. But when you came back to us, it went away. I was fine. Until the baby.
Did you talk to Bran about it? Whatever it was. I put my face against the small of his back, warming him with my breath. Samuel would see suicide as cowardice, I tried to reassure myself. And Samuel hated cowards. I might not want to love Samuel, not after the way we'd once hurt each other, but I didn't want to lose him either.
The Maroc knows, he whispered. He always does. Everyone else believed I was the same, just like always. My father knew something was wrong, that I wasn't right. I was going to leave, but then you came.
If Bran couldn't fix him, what was I supposed to do?
You left the pack for a long time, I said, feeling my way.
He'd left the pack shortly after I had, over 15 years ago. He'd stayed away for most of those 15 years.
Bran told me you went lone wolf in Texas.
Wolves need their pack, or else they start to get a little strange. Lone wolves were, in general, an odd bunch, dangerous to themselves and others.
Yes.
Every muscle in his body tensed, waiting for the blow to fall. I decided that meant I was on the right track.
It's not easy being alone. Not for years.
I scooted up a little until I could wrap myself around him, tucking my legs behind his. I slipped the arm I wasn't lying on around his side and pressed my hand over his stomach, showing him that he wasn't alone, not while he lived at my house. He started to shake, vibrating the whole bed. I tightened my arm, but I didn't say anything. I'd gone as far as I was willing to go. Some wounds need to be pricked so they can drain. Others just need to be left alone. I wasn't qualified to know the difference. He wrapped both of his arms over the top of mine.
I hid myself from the wolves. I hid among the humans.
He paused.
Hid from myself. What I did to you was wrong, Mercedes. I told myself I couldn't wait. I couldn't take the chance that another would take you from me. I had to make you mine so my children would live. But I knew I was taking advantage of you. You weren't old enough to defend yourself from me.
I rubbed my nose against his back in reassurance, but I didn't speak. He was right, and I respected him too much to lie.
I violated your trust, and my father's too. I couldn't live with it. I had to leave. I traveled to the far corner of the country and became someone else. Samuel Cornick, college freshman, fresh off the farm, with a newly minted high school diploma. Only on the night of the full moon did I allow myself to remember what I was.
The muscles under my hands convulsed twice.
In med school, I met a girl. She reminded me of you, quiet with a sneaky sense of humor. She looked a little like you, too. It felt like a second chance to me, a chance to do it right. Or maybe I just forgot. We were friends at first, in the same program at school. Then it became something more. We moved in together.
I knew what was coming, because it was the worst thing I could think of that could have happened to Samuel. I could smell his tears, though his voice was carefully even.
We took precautions, but we weren't careful enough. She got pregnant.
His voice was stark.
We were doing our internships. We were so busy we hardly had time to say hello to each other. She didn't notice until she was nearly 3 months pregnant, because she assumed that the symptoms were from stress. I was so happy.
Samuel loved children. Somewhere I had a picture of him wearing a baseball cap with Elise Smithers, age 5, riding him as if he had been a pony. He'd thrown away everything he believed in, because he thought I, unlike a human or werewolf, could give him children who would live. I tried not to let him know I was crying, too.
We were doing internships.
He was speaking quietly now.
It's time-consuming and stressful. Long irregular hours. I was working with an orthopedic surgeon nearly a 2-hour drive from our apartment. I came home one night and found a note.
I hugged him harder, as if I could have stopped what happened.
A baby would have interfered with her schooling, he said. We could try again later. After she was established. After there was money. After...
He kept talking,
but he dropped into a foreign tongue, its liquid tone conveying his anguish better than the English words had. The curse of a long life is that everyone around you dies. You have to be strong to survive, and stronger to want to do so. Bran had told me once that Samuel had seen too many of his children die.
"That infant, tonight,
he'll live," I said, "because of you. He'll grow up strong and healthy."
"I lived like a student should, Mercy," he told me, "pretending to be poor like all the other students. I wonder if she knew that I had money, would she still have killed my baby? I would have quit school to take care of the child. Was it my fault?"
Samuel curled his whole body around my arm, as if someone had punched him in the stomach. I just held him. There was nothing I could say to make it better. He knew better than I what the chances of his baby being born healthy had been. It didn't matter. His child had never gotten any chance at all. I held Samuel while the sun set, comforting him as best I could. Chapter 6. I left Samuel sleeping and made tuna fish sandwiches for dinner, something I could put in the fridge for him in case he awoke hungry, but he stayed in his room until past my bedtime. I set my alarm clock for a couple of hours later than my usual wake-up. Tomorrow was Saturday when I was officially closed. I had work to do, but nothing urgent, and Gabriel wasn't scheduled to come in until 10. When I knelt for prayer before bedtime, I asked God to help Warren and Stefan catch the demon, as had become my usual plea. This time, I added a prayer for Samuel as well. After a moment's thought, I prayed for Adam, too. I didn't really think it was his fault that he turned me into a submissive ninny. Even though I was all set to wake up late, for me, I got up just before dawn, because someone was tapping on my window. I pulled my pillow over my head.
"Mercy."
My window's assailant kept his voice down, but I knew it anyway. "Stefan." I rubbed my eyes. "Are you asking for quarter? I'm not in a particularly merciful mood." I can make fun of my name, but no one else can, unless I'm in a really good mood, or if I start it first. I heard him laugh.
"For quarters, perhaps, but I have no need to yield if you are not assaulting me."
One of the nice things about Stefan was that he usually got my jokes, no matter how lame. Even better, he'd play along. "You need money?" I asked in mock surprise. "I can write you a check, but I only have a couple of dollars in cash."
"I need a place to sleep the day, love. Would you shelter me?"
"All right." I threw back my covers and started for the front door. There went my plans to sleep in. The sky was striped with the beginnings of sunrise when I opened the door. "Left it a little late, Stefan," I said, adding his name so that Samuel, who would have heard me open the door, wasn't alarmed. Stefan didn't appear to hurry, but neither did he waste much time standing on my doorstep. I hadn't seen him since the night of his trial. He looked tired. His shoulders were slumped, and he didn't move with his usual effervescent energy.
"I sent Daniel home, but I had a tip I had to check out. I thought I'd have time, but my powers lessen as dawn approaches, and I found myself on your doorstep," he grinned, "begging for mercy."
I escorted him to my bedroom door. "I thought Warren and Ben were working with you. Why didn't you have them check it out?"
"I sent them home earlier. They have jobs to do today, and even the werewolves need sleep."
"They're working on a Saturday?"
"Warren has a job for his lawyer friend, and Ben had things to do that he couldn't get done when everyone else was working."
Ben was a computer geek working at the Pacific Northwest Nation Laboratory, which was affiliated in some arcane manner with the Hanford nuclear site. Daryl, Adam's second, had gotten him the job, and from all accounts, Ben was a pretty decent nerd. I think it surprised Daryl, who wasn't accustomed to being surprised. I pulled open the closet door. Stefan's pillow and blanket were still there from the last time he'd spent the day. "Are you sure the sorcerer is still here? He could have moved on." Stefan looked grim.
"Watch the news this morning,"
was all he said before stepping into my closet and closing the door.
The car wreck that had so upset Samuel made the early news. So did the violent deaths of three young men who had gotten in an argument. We were 2 weeks into a heat wave that showed no signs of letting up anytime soon. There was another arts festival in Howard Amon Park this weekend. I assumed Littleton wouldn't have anything to do with the arts festival or the weather. At least I hoped that a sorcerer wasn't powerful enough to affect the weather, so I paid close attention to the report on the dead men. "Drugs are a growing problem," the newscaster said as EMTs carried black-sheathed bodies out on stretchers behind him. "Especially meth. In the last 6 months, the police have shut down 3 meth labs in the Tri-City area. According to witnesses, last night's violence apparently broke out in a meth lab when one man made a comment about another's girlfriend. All of the men were high, and the argument quickly escalated into violence that left 3 men dead. 2 other men are in police custody in connection to the deaths." On the brighter side, all of Samuel's patients were apparently still alive, though the baby was in critical condition. I turned off the TV, poured a bowl of cereal, then sat down at my computer desk in the spare bedroom while I ate breakfast and searched the Internet. The online story had even fewer details than the morning news. On a whim, I looked up Littleton's name and found his website offering online tarot readings for a mere $19.95, all major credit cards accepted. No checks. Not a trusting soul, our sorcerer. On impulse, since Elisabetta wouldn't tell me anything, I Googled for demons and sorcerers, and I found myself buried under a morass of contradictory garbage. "Any idiot can put up a website," I growled, shutting down the computer. Medea meowed in sympathy as she licked the last of the milk out of my cereal bowl and then cleaned her face with a paw. Dirty bowl in hand, I checked in on Samuel, but his room was empty. When he hadn't gotten up at Stefan's arrival, I should have realized he was gone. He didn't have to work today. It worried me, but I wasn't his mother. He didn't have to tell me where he was going any more than I usually told him my plans. So I couldn't pry, no matter how worried I was. With that thought in mind, I wrote him a note. "S. sleeping in my closet. I'm at work until... ... Stop by if you need anything. Me." I left it on his bed, then rinsed out my bowl and left it in the dishwasher. I started for the door, but the sight of the phone on the end table by the door stopped me. Samuel had been in a bad way last night. I knew his father would want to know about it. I stared at the phone. I wasn't a snitch. If Samuel wanted the Maroc to know about his problems, he would have stayed in Aspen Creek. Samuel had his own cell phone. He could call Bran if he needed help, which would be when hell froze over. Samuel had taught me a lot about independence, which was actually an unusual trait for a werewolf. Bran might be able to help, but it wouldn't be right for me to call him behind Samuel's back. I hesitated, then remembered that Samuel had called Z to check up on me. I picked up the phone and made the long-distance call to Montana.
"Yes?"
Unless he wanted it to, Bran's voice didn't sound like it belonged to the most powerful werewolf in North America. It sounded like it belonged to a nice young man. Bran was deceptive that way, all nice and polite. The act fooled a lot of wolves into stupidity. Me? I knew what the act hid. "It's me," I said, "about Samuel." He waited. I started to say something, and then guilt stopped my tongue. I knew darned well what Samuel told me had been in confidence.
"Mercedes."
This time Bran didn't sound like a nice young man. "He had a little trouble last night," I said finally. "Do you know what happened to him in Texas?"
"He won't talk about Texas."
I drummed my fingers against my kitchen counter and then stopped when it reminded me of the vampire's mistress. "You need to ask him about Texas," I said. Bran didn't ask people about the past as a rule. It had something to do with being very old, but more to do with being wolf. Wolves are very centered in the here and now.
"Is he all right?"
"I don't know."
"Are there any bodies?" he said dryly.
"No, nothing like that. I shouldn't have called."
"Samuel is my son," Bran said softly. "You did right to call. Mercy, living in a town with a sorcerer isn't going to make him the safest roommate if something is upsetting him. You might consider moving in with Adam until they find the demon rider."
"Demon rider?"
I asked, though I was thinking about what he'd said.
Sorcerer, as opposed to demon-ridden as the possessed are, though there's not much to choose between them, except that the demon-ridden are easier to spot. They're in the middle of the carnage, instead of on the sidelines.
You mean sorcerers attract violence? I asked. I should have called Bram for information about the sorcerer earlier.
Does Sugarwater attract hornets? Violence, blood, and evil of all kinds. Do you think I had Adam send his wolves out to help the vampires with this hunt because I like vampires?
Actually, I had thought Warren and Ben volunteered.
If there's a sorcerer about, all the wolves will have to hold tight to their control. So don't go around pushing buttons, honey, especially with the younger wolves. You'll get hurt or killed.
He'd been warning me about pushing buttons for as long as I could remember. I don't know why. I'm not stupid. I'm always careful when I torment werewolves. Then I remembered Samuel's eyes last night. I won't, I promised, meaning it. But then he said, good girl, and hung up. As if he'd never doubted I'd do as he told me. Bran seldom had to worry about people not following his orders, except for me. I guess he'd forgotten about that. It was a good thing there weren't any werewolves around to annoy. I'd like to think I was grown up enough not to pick a fight just because Bran told me not to, but still. I wouldn't have poked at Samuel, not in his current state, but it was probably a good thing Ben wasn't around. Although it was not yet 8 a.m, there was a car waiting for me in the parking lot, a sky-blue Miata convertible. Even after our talk last night, Adam had sent Honey out to babysit me again. Sometimes you wonder what gets into parents when they name their children. I knew a girl named Helga, who grew up to be 5 feet tall and weighed 95 pounds. Sometimes, though, sometimes, parents get it right. Honey had waves of shimmering golden brown hair that fell over her shoulders to her hips. Her face was all soft curves and pouty lips, the kind of face you'd expect to see in a professional cheerleading outfit, though I've never seen Honey wear anything that wasn't classy.
I've been waiting here for an hour and a half, she said, sounding miffed as she got out of her car.
Today she was wearing creamy linen shorts that would show every smudge of dirt. If she irritated me too much today, I could always get her with my grease gun. It's Saturday, I told her amiably, cheered by my thoughts. I work whatever hours I want to on Saturday. However, I believe in being fair. Since you had to wait for me, why don't you count that as a good effort and go on home?
She raised an eyebrow. Because Adam sent me here to watch you and make sure the boogeyman doesn't come and eat you. And, as much as I'd like to see that happen, I don't disobey the Alpha.
There were a lot of reasons I didn't like Honey. The car I was working on needed a new starter. That's how it all began. 3 hours later, I was still sorting through unlabeled dusty boxes in the storage shed that predated Gabriel's reign of order on my part supply. Somewhere in here there should be 3 starters that fit a 1987 Fox, I told Gabriel, wiping my forehead off on my sleeve. I may not mind the heat usually, but the thermometer on the outside of the shed read 107 degrees.
If you told me that somewhere in here you had Excalibur and the Holy Grail, I believe you.
He grinned at me. He'd only come out after he'd finished the part supply order, so he still had energy to be happy.
Are you sure you don't want me to run down to the parts store and pick one up?
Fine, I said, dropping a box of miscellaneous bolts on the floor of the shed. I shut the door and locked it, though if I'd left it open, maybe some nice thieves would come and clean it out for me. Why don't you pick up some lunch for us while you're out? There's a good taco wagon by the car wash over on First.
Honey, too?
I glanced over at her car where she was sitting in air-conditioned comfort, as she had been since I came out here. I hoped she'd had her oil changed recently. Idling for hours could be hard on an engine. She saw me looking at her and smiled unpleasantly, still not a hair out of place. I'd been sweating in a dusty and greasy shed all morning, and the bruises Littleton left on my face were a lovely shade of yellow today. Yeah, I said reluctantly. Take the lunch money out of petty cash. Use the business credit card for the starter. Gabriel bounced back into the office and was on his way out by the time I made it to the door. The air conditioning felt heavenly, and I drank 2 glasses of water before going back to work. The garage wasn't as cool as the office, but it was a lot better than outside. Honey followed me through the office to the shop and managed to ignore me at the same time. I noticed with some satisfaction that soon after she left the office, she broke out in a sweat. I just had time to get a good start on a brake job when she spoke.
There's someone in the office.
I hadn't heard anyone, but I hadn't been listening. I wiped my hands hastily and headed back into the office. I wasn't officially opened, but a lot of my regular customers know I'm here on Saturdays more often than not. As it happened, the face was familiar. "Mr. Black," I said. "More car problems?" He started to look at me, but his eyes ran into trouble as they hit Honey and refused to move off of her. It was not an uncommon reaction. One more reason to hate Honey. Not that I needed another one. "Honey, this is Tom Black, a reporter who wants the skinny on what it's like to date Adam Hauptman, Prince of the Werewolves." I said it to get a rise out of her, but Honey disappointed me.
"Mr. Black," she said, coolly extending her hand.
He shook her hand, still staring at her, and then seemed to recover. He cleared his throat.
"Prince of the Werewolves, is he?"
"She can't talk to you, Mr. Black,"
Honey told him, though she glanced at me to make it clear that the words were directed at me. If she weren't more careful, she'd find herself outed as a werewolf. If she weren't dumber than a stump, she'd have known I don't take orders. Not from Bran, not from Adam or Samuel, certainly not from Honey. "No one ever told me not to talk to reporters," I said truthfully. Everyone just assumed I'd be smart enough not to. I was so busy tormenting Honey that I ignored what the implicit promise in my statement would do to the reporter.
"I will make it worth your while," Black said in a classic assumption close worthy of a used car salesman.
He reached into his suit jacket and pulled out a roll of bills in a gold clip and set them on the counter. If I hadn't been so ticked off with Honey and Adam for sticking me with her, I'd have laughed. But Honey was there, so I licked my lips and looked interested.
"Well," I began.
Honey turned to me, vibrating with rage.
"I hope that Adam lets me be the one to break your scrawny neck."
Yep, it wouldn't be long before everyone knew Honey was a werewolf. She was just too easy. I ought to have felt guilty for baiting her. Instead, I rolled my eyes at her.
"Please."
Black ignored Honey.
"I want to know what you think about him personally. What is dating a werewolf like?"
He gave me a charming smile, though his eyes were still watchful.
"The public wants to know."
The last statement was too comic book reporter for me to ignore. It pulled my attention from Honey. I considered Black thoughtfully for a moment. He smelled anxious and angry, not the emotions of a reporter about to get the story he wanted. I pushed the money roll back at him. "Put that away. I'm pretty upset with Adam right now, so I'd really like to give you an earful, especially with Honey watching. You may not quote me, but the truth is that for a domineering control freak, he's pretty damn nice. He's honest, hardworking, and generous. He's a good father. He's loyal to his people, and he takes care of them. It doesn't make a very good story, but that's your problem, not mine. If you are looking for dirt on Adam Hauptman, let me save you a lot of fruitless effort. There is no dirt." I don't know what kind of a reaction I expected, but it wasn't the one I got. He ignored the bills on the counter and leaned down over it, invading my space.
"He's a good father?"
he asked intently. The fake smile vanished from his face. I could smell his anxiety winning over anger. I didn't answer. I wasn't going to take responsibility for directing the eyes of the press toward Jesse when Adam had been so careful to keep her out of the way. Besides, the reporter's strange reactions made me think there was something else going on. Black closed his eyes briefly.
"Please," he said. "It's important."
I took a deep breath and could smell the truth of his words, the first complete truth he'd uttered in my presence. This was very important to him. I shuffled through possibilities and then asked, "Who do you know that is a werewolf?"
"Are you a werewolf?"
he asked. "No." Not that he could have known if I lied, because he was decidedly human. The same thought must have occurred to him. He waved away his last question impatiently.
"It doesn't matter. If you'll tell me why you say he's a good father, I'll tell you about the werewolves I know."
Fear.
Not the kind of fear you feel when unexpectedly confronted by a monster in the dark, but the slower, stronger fear of something terrible that was going to happen. Fear and pain of an old wound, the kind that Samuel had smelled of last night. I hadn't been able to help Samuel. Not enough. I considered Mr. Black, who might or might not be a reporter. "Your word you won't use this for a story," I said, ignoring Honey's raised eyebrows.
"You have it."
"Are you a reporter?" I asked. He nodded his head, a quick up and down, followed by a get-on-with-it glare. I thought a moment. "Let me give you an example. Adam is supposed to be speaking to government officials about legislation dealing with werewolves. He's up to his neck in touchy negotiations. When his daughter needed him, he dropped everything and came back here, though he has a number of trusted people he could have called upon to take care of her."
"She's human, though, right? His daughter. I read that they can't have werewolf children."
I frowned at him, trying to see the point of his question. "Does it matter?" He rubbed his face tiredly.
"I don't know. Does it? Would he treat her differently if she was a werewolf?"
"No," said Honey.
Black was being so interesting, I'd forgotten about Honey.
"No. Adam takes care of his own, wolf, human, or whatever."
She looked at me pointedly.
"Even when they don't want him to."
It felt weird to exchange a smile with Honey, so I stopped as soon as I could. I think she felt the same way, because she turned her head to stare out the window. "Or when they don't belong to him," I told her. Then I turned to Black. "So tell me about your werewolves."
3 years ago, my daughter survived an attack by a rogue werewolf," he said, speaking quickly, as if that would make it easier for him to handle. "She was 10.
10? Whispered Honey. "And she survived?"
Like Honey, I'd never heard of someone attacked so young surviving. Especially not a girl. Females don't survive the change as well as males. That was why Adam's pack only had 3 females and nearly 10 times that many males. Lost in his tragic story, Black didn't seem to hear Honey's comment.
"There was another werewolf. He killed her attacker before it could finish her off. He brought her back to us and told us what to do for her. He told me to hide her. He said that a young girl might have it rough in a pack."
"Yes," said Honey fervently.
At my questioning look, she said,
"Unmated females belong to the alpha. Your wolf instincts kick in, so it's not terrible,"
her eyes said differently,
"even if you don't particularly like the alpha. But a girl so young, I'm not certain that an alpha would spare her."
She took a deep breath and whispered almost to herself,
"I know some of them would even enjoy it."
Black nodded, as if this wasn't news to him, though it was to me. I thought I knew all there was to know about werewolves. "What about when she first changed?" I asked. Humans are not equipped to deal with a new-made werewolf.
"I built a cage in the basement," he said, "and every full moon I chain her and lock her in."
Every full moon, even after 3 years, I thought. She should have managed to gain control of her wolf by now.
2 months ago, she broke the chain to her collar." Black looked ill. "I got a thicker chain, but this time, my wife told me that she gouged a hole in the cement. I was in Portland covering a trade conference. I called the werewolf, the one who saved her. He told me she was getting stronger, that I had to find a pack for her. He told me our local alpha would be a poor choice. When he found out I was in Portland, he gave me Hauptman's name, and yours."
I felt sorry for his daughter. And for him. Sorrier still, because finding an alpha who wouldn't abuse her might be the least of his problems if she hadn't managed to control her wolf yet. Wolves who are out of control are killed by their alpha so they don't hurt anyone else. I didn't want to give Adam responsibility for a young girl's death. "There may be someone closer to where you live," I said. "Let me make a phone call."
"No," said Black, taking 2 steps back.
He might not be a werewolf, but he was fast. I never noticed the gun until it was in his hands.
"It's loaded with silver," he said.
The spike of fear I felt from him made me want to pat him on the back and tell him it would be all right, or it would if he didn't shoot me and Honey didn't kill him. I don't think he was used to combat situations because he ignored Honey and kept the gun on me. "He's not going to shoot anyone, Honey," I told her as she started to move. "It's all right, Mr. Black. I won't mention your name.
Has your contact told you anything about the Maroc? He shook his head. Honey waited, her eyes locked on his gun. Okay. The Maroc is like the alpha of all the alphas. That there was a head werewolf was kind of an open secret. Everyone knew that there was someone pulling the werewolf's strings, and there was a lot of speculation about who it might be, so I hadn't given away any great secret. Bran wasn't out to the public. If things went badly, he wanted to make sure that the sanctuary he'd established in Montana remained a safe haven. Even if he had been out, no one would think that he was the Maroc. Being unremarkable was one of Bran's favorite talents, and he was good at it. He'll know which alphas will take care of your daughter and which ones to stay away from better than any lone wolf could. It's his job to take care of the werewolves, Mr. Black, to make sure the ones like your daughter are safe. And to make sure the ones who were not able to control their wolfish side were killed quickly and painlessly before they started killing people, people like their parents and families.
All right, he said at last. Call him. But if you say something I don't like, I'll kill you.
I believed him. He had the look of a man with his back to the wall. Honey eased closer, close enough that she'd probably be able to stop him before he pulled the trigger. Probably, if she wanted to badly enough. I took out my cell phone and placed the call. Hello? It was a woman's voice. Damn, Bran's wife didn't like me. Not like Honey disliked me, but the I'll kill you if I get a chance kind of not like. She'd tried it a couple of times. She was the reason I always called Bran's cell phone and not his home number. This is Mercedes, I said. I'm calling on official business. I need to talk to your husband. I heard Bran's voice, but he was speaking too low for me to hear anything except the command in his tone. There were a few clicks and unidentifiable noises, and then Bran came on the line.
How can I help you? He asked, sounding calm, though I could hear his mate's bitter voice in the background.
Briefly, I explained the situation to him. I didn't tell him that I was worried about a wolf who couldn't control herself after 3 years, but he must have heard it in my voice, because he interrupted me.
It's all right, Mercy. A child chained in the basement doesn't learn control because it is not expected of her. With a little help, she might be fine. Any child who survives a werewolf attack before adolescence has willpower to spare. Where does he live?
I relayed Bran's question. Black shook his head. He still had his gun out, pointed at me. I gave an exaggerated sigh. No one intends your daughter harm.
Fine, said Bran's voice in my ear. Roughly 3 years ago, a rogue werewolf killed by a lone wolf. There were two incidents that might fit, but only one of the lone wolves would take it upon himself to help a girl. Tell your gentleman that he's from somewhere near Washington, D.C., probably in Virginia, and his werewolf friend is Joseph Riddlesback.
Not a good idea, I told Bran as I looked Black in the eyes. It was hard to blame him for the gun when I could read the fear in his face. He's worried about his daughter. She's 13 and he doesn't want her hurt. I had to use the tone of my voice to convey just how worried Black was, much too worried to amaze him with Bran's powers of deduction.
I see. A little paranoid, is he?
Absolutely, I agreed. There was a short pause. Then Bran said,
Do you have a sheet of paper handy?
Yes.
Right. Joseph is right. Neither of the pack leaders in that area are the sort I'd trust with a child. I'm going to give you the names of the pack leaders who would be safe with a child. Leaders who would not mind a reporter knowing who they are. It is very short, and none of them are anywhere near Virginia. There are others. Do you believe his story?
Yes, I said.
Then I'll also give you places where the alphas have not come out to the public and don't want to do so, but who would take care of a young girl. If he wants to chance it, he could go there and see if the alpha would meet with him.
I wrote down the names he told me, 4 men, including Adam, complete with phone numbers. Then I wrote down 15 towns. 19 alphas out of maybe 150 that Bran thought could be trusted to help a child without abusing her. It made me acknowledge just how lucky I was that the werewolf relative my mother went to for help when she realized I could turn into a coyote belonged to the Maroc and not to some other pack.
You can send them to me, too, he said when he was done.
But, I bit my tongue, I wasn't going to tell a reporter that the Maroc was one of the wolves who wasn't out yet.
I trust your judgment, Mercy, and I've raised a few strays before.
Like me. I know.
He must have heard the gratitude in my voice because I heard the